We're continuing our study in the 25th chapter of 1 Samuel, and we're ready to begin to 32nd verse. In this passage, David has just been dissuaded from doing a very wrongful act. He and his men had been slighted by a man named Nabal that asked him for provisions, for food and water, and they had done good to Nabal's herdsmen at a previous time, and they expected some kindness in return, and Nabal had rejected them. And it had so angered David that David decided that he and his men would go and just completely slaughter Nabal and all of his servants, wouldn't leave one male alive, and they were on the way to do this when Nabal's wife, Abigail, met David and gave him a good, strong argument as to why he shouldn't do this thing. She turned David back. She gave David the provisions that he wanted to have. And so we're at that point where David has just been persuaded that he shouldn't go against Nabal. Abigail has made a very elaborate argument and speech to change David's mind. And so beginning at the 32nd verse, we see David's reaction to Abigail's action. And David said to Abigail, "Blessed be the Lord God of Israel, which sent thee this day to meet me." So it was a blessing to David that Abigail had come to change his mind. She had saved David from doing something that he should not do. She had spared him a lot of grief of conscience. She had spared him from committing a sin. She had saved a lot of lives. And so she had really been very instrumental in a great beneficial thing by changing David's mind. But now David sees what a benefit this is. And he says, "Blessed be the Lord God of Israel, which sent thee this day to meet me." It was actually the hand of God that had intervened here. God had used Abigail as an instrument, as a tool to bring about his will to change David's mind. And many times in this life we have to realize that what others do to us and for us and about us may be the actual hand of God that's intervening on our behalf to give us guidance. And so David gives God thanks for this. He recognizes that it's God. And he says, "Blessed be God, which sent thee this day to meet me." And then verse 33, "And blessed be thy advice, and blessed be thou, which has kept me this day from coming to shed blood." So he also gives thanks for and is recognizing the fact that her advice was something to be blessed. "Blessed be thy advice." And of course, when we have wise counsel come our way, when someone gives us an idea or a suggestion or a picture that causes us to see what's right and what's best, then that is something to be thankful for. That's something that's blessed. That is a blessing to us. Sometimes we don't think about other people's words and thoughts and ideas being a blessing to us. But in this case, it certainly was a blessing to David, and David recognized it. "Blessed be thy advice, and blessed be thou." So he also recognizes that this woman had some qualities that helped bring all this about too. She was responsible for it, so far as the human side of it goes. "Blessed be thou for what she's done." And what has she done? "Which has kept me this day from coming to shed blood and from avenging myself with mine own hand." I was going to do something wrong. I was going to shed blood, and I was going to get vengeance. I was going to avenge myself with mine own hand. Of course, we know that the Bible principle is that God says, "Vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord." And so God does not intend for us to get vengeance with our own hand. It's not our place. It's not our privilege. It's not our obligation. It's not our responsibility. We do not have to take on that great responsibility of avenging a wrongful act. That's not our duty to do that. It's not even our place to do that. That's God's place. So we depend upon God. We look to God. And God then gets the vengeance. David is about to do something here that was very wrong. And whenever this woman Abigail pointed out to him, and David finally came to his senses and saw how wrong he was going to be, now he's very thankful for the fact that he's been turned back. So we are tempted many times to avenge ourselves. We may not want to shed blood, but we may want to do something that's equal to that, in that we want to get some kind of malice and vengeance against our neighbor or our brother. We may have some kind of hateful action toward that person that is really very akin to a murderous desire, although we don't intend to actually literally shed blood. We'd like to destroy that person's character, or that person's image. We'd like to put the person down some way or another. We'd like to make some catty remark to them. And if we can be held back from doing that till we get our senses, if we can be dissuaded from some kind of vengeance, then actually we've had a favor done to us. And we should recognize it and be thankful for it, as David is here. And we find in Psalm 141, verse 5, where David makes a statement there that may very well be relating to this situation. There, David says, "Let the righteous smite me. It shall be a kindness. Let him reprove me. It shall be an excellent oil which shall not break my head. For yet my prayer also shall be in their calamities." So David here speaks of the righteous smiting him and it being a kindness to him, and of the righteous reproving him, and it shall be an excellent oil which shall not break my head. And so many times we may have the righteous to find a need to smite us. That is to step in, to talk some sense into us, to change our course of action, to convince us that what we're doing is not the best thing. And when we do, it's a blessing to us. And that's the way David recognizes this action of Abigail. And he goes on in verse 34 and says, "For in very deed, as the Lord God of Israel liveth, which hath kept me back from hurting thee, except thou hadst hasted and come to meet me, surely they had not been left unto Nabal by the morning light, so much as one male person." Why, I had taken an oath that I was going to do this. Now we find here that an oath that is taken to do something that's not right really doesn't have to be bound upon us. We don't have to bind ourselves with an oath to do something that's wrong. If at the time we took the oath we thought it was right, but we learned that it's a sin, we learned that it's a crime against God, we do not have to go through with a sin against God. And that was the case here. David said, as the Lord God of Israel liveth. Now, he was the one that David had vowed to do this thing by, but now he says, just as surely as there's a living God, you have kept me from doing something that was bad. Yeah, he says, talking about the Lord God of Israel liveth, he says, which hath kept me back from hurting thee. Now, there was two ways that David might have hurt Abigail. First of all, when she came to meet him to change his mind, David might have done some physical harm here, thinking her as some kind of an obstacle to his path of action. He might have done something bad. Also, had she done nothing, when David went into the camp of Nabal, she might very well have been harmed there whenever they made the great slaughter. So he says, God hath kept me back from hurting thee. So not only did Abigail's actions help David and keep David from doing something wrong, but it also helped Abigail because it actually preserved her and saved her life. And the way that God did this was, except thou hadst hasted and come to meet me. Well, she came in a hurry. She came before David had a chance to do anything that was wrong. And so he says, surely there had not been left unto Nabal by the morning light so much as one male person. I would not have left one person by morning light had you not come. Just think what a great bad deed you spared me from doing. Just think how much this would have been on my conscience. Just think how for the rest of my life I would have regretted having done this wrong thing. And you saved me from doing it. Verse 35, so David received of her hand that which she had brought him, and said unto her, go up in peace to thine house. See, I have hearkened to thy voice, and have accepted thy person. So here we find that David graciously accepts the gifts that Abigail brings him, and he tells her to go in peace to thine house. You can go on back home now. There's not going to be any fight. No physical action is going to be taken. It's going to be peace now. You see, I have hearkened to thy voice. I've listened to everything that you've had to say. You've made good reasoning sense to me. And I'm going to follow your advice. And I have accepted thy person. I appreciate you as a person. And I've accepted you. That is, you're a friend to me. You're no longer considered to be an enemy. You're no longer considered to be somebody that is alien to me and my cause. I've accepted thy person. So we see then that David is successfully turned back from doing this bad deed that he had proposed to do against Nabal. Now in verse 36, and Abigail came to Nabal. So Abigail went back home to her husband Nabal, and behold, he held a feast in his house, like the feast of a king, and Nabal's heart was merry within him, for he was very drunken. Wherefore she told him nothing, less or more, until the morning light. So when Abigail comes back home, she finds her husband Nabal holding true to character. He has now held a feast in his house, a feast that was so great that it's described here as being like the feast of a king. And his heart was merry within him, for he was very drunken. He's in a drunken stupor. And although he was so stingy that he wouldn't give the simplest of provisions to David, now he's lavishly using food and drink here to hold a great feast. It was a feast for all of his house. And this is probably something that Abigail is familiar with. She's familiar with him in these drunken states. She knows how to handle him here. And so as she comes back from her journey in which she met David and prevented him from coming to kill Nabal, she decided this is not the time to tell Nabal about the situation. So she didn't tell him anything that night till morning light. She lets him pretty well sleep this drunken, stuporous state off. So we find that the first picture here of Nabal is that he is dead drunk. Verse 37, but it came to pass in the morning, when the wine was gone out of Nabal, and his wife had told him these things, that his heart died within him, and he became as a stone. So next we find that Nabal, when he gets over the state of being drunk, dead drunk, he now has his heart to die within him. His heart becomes as a stone. Now there's many reasons why this may have been, and we don't know for sure why it was that his heart died within him. It may be that after he has sobered up and he sees what a foolish person he's been, that he's regretful for that act, and that may have been the reason that his heart died within him. But it's more than likely whenever he saw how great peril he was in, how near David came to completely wiping him off from the face of the earth, how great a danger he was in, and how helpless he would have been to have prevented it, that this then might have put so much fear in him that he had his heart to become as a stone. But we know that it's a very common thing when a person becomes drunken, and when a person does the things that usually go along with this drunken state, that later when they sober up, they have some remorse, some sorrow, some grief for having done it, although they may not have enough love for God, they may not have enough faith in God to be able to break the spell of this drink that's going to come back upon them again and again. Verse 38, and it came to pass about 10 days after that the Lord smote Nabal that he died. So about 10 days later, Nabal actually died physically. So we had, first of all, the fact that he was dead drunk. Second of all, he was dead in his heart. Third of all, now he's dead in a physical state. The Lord smote Nabal. We don't know what kind of a smiting this was, what kind of an illness or disease or thing that took Nabal, but in the Lord's mind, Nabal was no longer deemed worthy to be allowed to live any longer. And when David heard that Nabal was dead, he said, "Blessed be the Lord, that he hath pleaded the cause of my reproach from the hand of Nabal, and hath kept his servant from evil." So now that Nabal was dead, nobody seems to mourn him. Nobody seems to be sorry at his passing. Nobody regrets the fact that Nabal is no longer alive. And actually, David, when he hears about his death, he gives thanks to God. Not so much that Nabal is dead, but he's thankful that God has resolved this problem with Nabal in such a way that David's hand didn't have to do any evil, that David had been kept from evil. So he hath pleaded the cause of my reproach from the hand of Nabal. God has taken David's side here. God has pleaded David's cause with Nabal. And of course, when God pleads, when God reasons, when God brings judgment, it's a final judgment. And the judgment brought upon Nabal was that he be put to death, that he die. And when God has pleaded the cause of David's reproach, then he hath kept his servant from evil. He kept David from doing any evil. David did not take vengeance himself. David did not enter into an act that would have been wrong, that he would have been sorry for, so he was actually kept from evil. For the Lord had returned the wickedness of Nabal upon his own head. Then we find here that God really did get vengeance upon Nabal, that he returned this wickedness that Nabal had given out. He returned it. And it seemed like, well, maybe that this was a little strong. All Nabal had done was refuse to give any kind of hospitality to David and his men. But we find that God judges us on those simple things. It's whether or not we are going to give somebody something that has need. If they're naked, do we clothe them? If they're hungry, do we feed them? If they're thirsty, do we give them a drink of water? If they're sick, do we visit them? On and on, these very simple little acts, those are the things that are going to be asked us in the judgment day, if we've done these things or not. And if we haven't done them, then we're going to be cast out from the presence of the Lord. That's going to be the basis for our judgment, whether or not we are willing to do the very simplest of things towards alleviating somebody else's distress. And Nabal had refused to do this. And so David describes this, that the Lord had returned the wickedness of Nabal upon his own head. Nabal wasn't deemed fit to continue living because he had refused to do this. Now we need to learn another thing here is, and that is that the Lord does get vengeance. It may not be immediately. It may not even be in this life. It may not be in our lifetime. But God does get vengeance. He does repay. He does return the wickedness of others upon them. And consequently, it's not our place, our duty, our responsibility to do this. We're relieved of a tremendous burden here. We do not have to worry about paying somebody back for an evil deed. God does this. This is God's place. And so it spares us from evil. It spares us from even having any bad thoughts about the matter. God takes care of it. This is God's jurisdiction, is God's duty, and God does it. And here in the case of Nabal, David states it very plainly, that God hath pleaded the cause of my reproach. When somebody has been in a position to receive wrong from another person, especially when a child of God receives wrong from another person, then God is the one who pleads their cause. God is the one who goes into the arena for them. God is the one who will then take the vengeance for them. He did so here in the case of Nabal. David recognized it. David states it very plainly. And then the Lord hath returned the wickedness of Nabal upon his own head. So the death of Nabal wasn't one that seemed to be mourned by anyone. It was simply the justice of God being done. And so we find that verse 39 further says, and David sent and communed with Abigail to take her to him to wife. So David wants to marry Abigail. And he sends a servant to bring this message to her. He's seen enough of her to know that he thinks she's a very desirable person. He has accepted her person, as he said earlier. And here's a woman with wisdom, judgment, a woman who's willing to act in a very prudent way. And it had quite an impression upon David. And verse 40, when the servants of David were come to Abigail to Carmel, they spake unto her, saying, David sent us unto thee to take thee to him to wife. So he used his servants to bring the message to Abigail. And of course, this seemed to have had a very favorable effect upon Abigail. Verse 41, and she arose and bowed herself on her face to the earth and said, behold, let thine handmaid be a servant to wash the feet of the servants of my Lord. So Abigail was so humble here. She said, I'll be willing to be your servant. I'll be willing to be such a low servant that I'll wash the feet of the other servants of my Lord. And so she seemed to be very willing to accept this proposal of marriage on the part of David. And Abigail hasted and arose and rode upon an ass with five damsels of hers that went after her. And she went after the messengers of David and became his wife. So we see here that David took Abigail to wife. Now there's some very extenuating circumstances here involved in this. We don't have all the answers for why David was able to take Abigail to wife. We know that he'd already married Saul's daughter, Michal. And we see that Saul has done him wrong in that area also. But there are some things that are no doubt not exactly right here about David taking Abigail to wife. And we find that David has another wife besides Abigail too. and were not able to explain these Old Testament instances of multiple wives. But here again we find that the Bible tells things like they are without glossing them over and making them look one way when they're really not. And so verse 43 says, David also took Ahinoam of Jezreel, and they were also both of them his wives. But Saul had given Michal his daughter, David's wife, to Phalti, the son of Laish, which was of Galim. So Saul had taken his daughter Michal, who was actually the wife of David, he had taken her and given her to another person to be his wife. And no doubt this was the thing that set David off on this tangent of marrying somebody else, which he did do. He had two other wives, Abigail and Ahinoam. And we know that this wasn't a pleasing thing with God for David to have two wives. And we see here where he was no longer living with the wife of his youth, Michal. And regardless of those circumstances, it's most difficult from a biblical standpoint to justify this action of David to take other wives besides Michal. Nevertheless, he did it. This is probably a weakness on the part of David. But as we said, the Bible tells things like they are. Saul had done David a great wrong by taking Michal away from him and by giving her to somebody else to be someone else's wife. This is a very wicked deed. It's a very sinful thing. It's a very distressing thing among families today to have similar things happen today among families. It's one of the greatest sources of human grief that there is, and we're going to find that David really, in the long run, doesn't even remain faithful to the two wives that he has. Well, that closes the 25th chapter, and it also ends the story of Nabal. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friend.